of the dodecahedral nature of the universe. Although I do believe that the human soul itself is quite spherical in nature. But it contains many spherical blobs. The soul is basically a blob within the dodecahedron of the universe.
A dodecahedral blob? I'm sorry, the universe is a dodecahedral blob?
Right. No, the souls within the universe are spherical blobs, staining the dodecahedron of the universe.
So we are stains upon a universal platonic solid.
That's right. Spherical stains.
Yeah, earlier today, I was wandering about the streets of Boston, and I slipped on a spherical blob.
Yeah, it's quite possible that was a soul that had descended from the astral plane and materialized into the physical plane as a stumbling block for you. And I think it's quite possible that that soul would be legally liable if you had injured yourself and fallen.
Yeah, the thought had not really occurred to me that I could sue the blob, but it certainly would be beneficial. I fortunately landed in a snowbank. The snow accumulates into quite large heaps and mountains in Boston in the winter.
Yeah. If you had sued, it probably would have brought some balance to the universe. It's what lawsuits usually do. They bring balance.
Yeah, I tend to agree there. I mean, I just worry about, like, how one would go about suing a spherical blob. Under which court of law, and if you were to win the case, what exactly you would collect from a spherical blob?
Well, there's essentially two options, I believe. One is to sue the spherical blob in the astral plane. So you'd have to do this while meditating. It would be part of your meditative practice, this lawsuit. The second option would be to wait until the true unification of the astral and the physical planes, which is scheduled to occur in the next several thousand years, in which case there would be a unified court of law that governs both aspects of the universe.
A unified court of law to govern...
Right, a universe-wide. People talk now sometimes about a world government, often the subject of many conspiracy theories. But I believe that world government itself is too limited. Eventually, we need to have a universe government that governs not only the physical, but the astral and the spiritual in one unified system.
Mm-hmm. The spiritual and the astral. Yeah, this sort of brings one to the idea of a one-particle universe. This idea that all things in existence are one. Not only am I one with Professor Levine here, but our eyes are one, and my head is one with the chair that I'm sitting on, and you know, the snow that I fell into is one with the pollution that makes it black. And the spherical blob that I slipped on is one with the derriere that it injured.
Well, certainly, when you fell, your body became one. It touched the snowbank.
And yet, so this idea of a one-particled universe really justifies the concept you were mentioning earlier, that one could be held legally liable even if one were a spherical blob. However, if I was also the spherical blob that made me slip, then how would I pay myself, and what form would the payment take?
Well, viewed externally, nothing would happen. In fact, viewed externally, there is no change. As Parmenides remarked upon, everything in the universe is one, and all change is illusion. However, from our current illusory state, our current sojourn in the world of falsity, one does observe change, despite its falsity, despite its non-existence. And thus, one observes lawsuits and exchanges of monetary funds.
You mean in a meditative way?
What I mean to say is that lawsuits do not truly exist. They are part of the earthly illusion of change and of difference. But in a deeper truth, everything, as you said, is one, the one particle universe. Everything is essentially one grain of sand, I believe.
I read recently that physicists, non-New Age physicists, had discovered that the universe was actually simply a holographic projection. So that, in other words, the universe as we view it exists as a film on the edge of some sphere somewhere else. And this is evident in some graininess, but it makes a lot of sense to me.
And as we often find, science, so-called science, and so-called physicists often discover what practitioners of meditation have known for thousands and millions and billions and trillions of years.
Yeah, trillions of years. Our operator is indicating that we have our first caller. Caller one, welcome to the air. Caller one?
Yes, hello.
Welcome to Music for Human.
Okay, I have a question. I wonder if you could help me out.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier today at just before 1:24 p.m., there was a song that was playing, and I was trying to discover who the artist or group was. It was a song that had a lot of clarinet music in it. It was very, very nice.
Clarinet does produce a very nice sound. It's not as deep as a bassoon, yet not as thin as the sound of a flute.
Yeah, I'm trying to discover who it was, what group or whatever it was done by. And I'm on your website, and I don't see any place that I'm able to look for today's music as to what songs were played at what time.
Well, caller, at 1:30, the show would have been lost and found. So it may be best to contact them directly.
Well, one other option, actually, is to... I find that many truths about the universe can be discovered through a form of higher consciousness. And might I suggest to the caller that perhaps he attempt to meditate on this matter to discover the truth. Caller?
Yes.
Does that sound... Do you think you'd be willing to try guided meditation?
No, my radio was garbled when I was trying to hear what the song was when they were identifying it. And there's no way that I was able to hear clearly what they were talking about.
Well, we also could offer a tarot reading on the possibility of success, but I think if you really want the answer, it may be best to contact the producers of the show.
And who might that be? Who would I ask for?
Well, that information is on the website.
It's okay. It's funny. It sounds a lot like a recurring dream that I have, where I hear this beautiful melody, and it's so beautiful that words cannot describe it. It's like nothing I've ever heard before. It's a melody that could possibly change my life. And when I'm about to hear who produced this melody, it gets garbled, and I can't hear the answer, and I can never hear the melody again.
Yeah, caller, I'm not sure that the caller is aware that he's on the air, that...
Well, would I be looking for the music director, the program guide director or editor, or the production director?
Caller, I suggest that you look at the programming schedule and contact the engineer for Lost and Found.
Well, I'm doing that, and it doesn't list an engineer. It lists the on-air talent, but it does not list the engineer.
Then I suggest contacting the programming director.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
A lost soul.
Indeed.
Finding music for human beings. Let us have a tarot reading on the probability of success. We will do two simultaneous readings, one with the traditional Rider-Waite-Smith tarot deck, and another on the French carte de jeu, playing cards. And let us focus on the caller.
Mm-hmm.
And on his quest for soothing clarinet sounds. So I've drawn the Eight of Pentacles. Professor Levine, would you care to describe the card?
Sure. This card shows a journeyer with a walking staff starting a journey up a mountain. And it shows eight goblets, golden goblets, lined up in front. And a moon and sun together in the sky. The moon has a worried expression on its face.
So I'm sorry, I think I said the Eight of Pentacles, but that's the Eight of Cups. So the Eight of Cups in spite of the image, which is of a dejected man deserting cups, which symbolize happiness, enterprise, previous concern. Other possible readings would be giving joy, mildness, timidity, honor, or modesty. So it sounds like our caller may be forced to give up his quest for the lovely clarinet music that he seeks.
Yes, I believe actually that the clarinets were really a form of dream music.
So maybe the cups symbolize the clarinets here.
And the quester has his back to the cups here. He's not going to find them. In fact, he's just going on a path up a mountain where he may find something more meaningful than the cups.
Or maybe he's giving up the clarinet music that he already has in search of more, which is him abandoning the memory of his clarinet music and not being satisfied with it. Let's draw a French card to take another shade of meaning. So we have drawn the Four of Spades, which depicts four spades.
Yes, and spades are often used to dig.
Spades are, yeah, digging instruments.
Right, which also symbolizes a quest.
Precisely, yeah. And we have two pointing upward and two pointing downward, which indicates that our caller, using the two that are pointing downward, is questing in a sensible direction, but also using two upward, which is an insensible direction. Mm. So that may correspond to him searching online and simultaneously calling music for human beings, which right. has nothing to do with the show in question.
But I would still interpret his call to our show as a search for deeper meaning. I think he knew that he wouldn't get the material answer by calling our show. But in his soul of souls, he realized that he would gain some advice that would help him on his quest for true enlightenment and for true clarinets, not just their material manifestation.
And maybe it was the spherical gelatinous blob that guided him to call music for humans. And yet, somehow, I don't think we were able to reach him.
Although, we didn't reach him in his conscious mind, in his pineal gland. We may have reached him in his subconscious, or his subconscious. We may have planted a seed for future growth and enlightenment.
There is always hope.
Yes, I find in general the subconscious to be a very, very powerful form of inspiration if one is able to tap down that deep into it.
It's a lot of subs. Let's check another card to indicate perhaps his future possibility with the quest for clarinet music. Oh dear, we have drawn the Major Arcana card 15, which is of course the Devil.
Yeah, this card can be very frightening. It depicts a devil with a feline face and beard and mouse-like ears and ram's horns and bat's wings and goat's feet and the belly of a beer drinker. An excessive beer drinker, I might add.
And attached to a cord.
Yes, are two human beings representing Adam and Eve, the male and the female.
And they have tails but no wings.
That's right.
Whereas the devil himself has no tail.
Indeed.
So I believe that this was originally a symbol of animal immodesty. But, you know, in our times, it may not no longer be an appropriate interpretation. It may simply indicate a risky endeavor.
Mm. Right, which is often symbolized by a nude with a chain around their neck.
And two of them.
Two of
actually,
them, chained to one another and to the devil.
To a giant animal being, a sort of Frankenstein combination.
Right.
So what this, I believe, indicates is that perhaps he would find someone else seeking the same music, and on the one hand, and on the other hand, that the music itself was an unusual ensemble.
Yeah, and perhaps this chaining is not something bad. I mean, we all want to be chained to that one other person.
We certainly do seem to seek that.
We seek the chaining, the bondage.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the caller, through his quest for the clarinet, whether he succeeds in the earthly realm or in the spiritual clarinet realm, will find that bondage that he so is looking for.
Let's draw another French card to, again, just accent the reading that we have made.
Eight of Diamonds.
So the Eight of Diamonds, which depicts eight diamonds arrayed on the card surface, which I believe indicates wealth and prosperity.
Right, and the diamond, of course, can symbolize diamond ring, which is related to the form of
bondage
that we discussed earlier.
We received many questions last week about the about tarot cards. In particular, we had one caller bring up the question of, which is a standard general philosophical question, about diversity versus purity.
Right.
So, in particular, her question was about was whether or not it was wise to do tarot readings for other people often. Her worry was that the cards would lose their bond with her, and that it would compromise the quality of her readings for herself.
Mm-hmm. Right, and she was concerned that at some point, even if she gave readings for herself, she might want to replace her deck because they'd become too saturated with the past readings, and it would bind her too much to her past and not allow her the freedom of beginning anew with freshness. And I think this raises a very interesting dilemma that we all face in our life. How much should we embrace our past, and how much should we clear the way for a new future?
It's certainly clear that some elements of our past or of our possessions aren't worth keeping. They are simply dragging us down.
Right, and we may not even be aware of everything that's driving us down. Could be past lives, or it could be memories that we've forgotten, suppressed. Many of us have a very large number of memories that our super consciousness has expunged from our consciousness, and only our subconsciousness may be aware of these submerged memories. But yet these memories reach out into our lives and they trip us, they trip our steps. And the only way we can really rid ourselves of these submerged memories is through meditative practices. And overeating, I think, often helps.
Yeah, particularly certain chemicals. I was mentioning earlier that there is, I mentioned this on the show that I consume large quantities of monosodium glutamate, and people, there was this outpouring that many people regard this as possibly very harmful.
Well, yes, taken in extremely concentrated and high doses can be fatal. For example, if one consumes monosodium glutamate equal to 3 times one's body weight in pure form, this will often lead to renal failure.
Yeah, I eat quite a bit, but it's not quite triple my own weight.
Right.
But I have found that combined with foods that are high in magnesium, I enjoy much richer and more vivid visions,
sensory experience
in my meditation than I have ever done without it. And I like this because it is not a drug. It's simply
it's a natural substance that naturally occurs in Chinese food.
Precisely, yeah. And also in seaweed and tomatoes and Parmesan cheese. Giving it this lovely, savory flavor.
Yeah, I find very constant and low levels of monosodium glutamate can lead to a constant buzz.
But there seems to be a really widespread irrational fear over the use of monosodium glutamate, which I think is ill-founded.
Yes, I actually am part of a movement to legalize monosodium glutamate in the state of Massachusetts.
Can you tell us more? This sounds very, very interesting to me.
Well, I started this campaign about 80 years ago when I was a middle-aged man. And monosodium glutamate had been banned shortly after cocaine had been banned. And I felt that it was unfair to lump this beautiful substance in with the white devilish substance of cocaine. So I started my campaign with many television advertisements urging the legalization of the substance monosodium glutamate. And this campaign continues to this day.
I mean, do you think that people lumped it in with cocaine because of the color or because, you know, they are both natural substances that have been chemically processed?
That's a good question. I think it was really a result of the women's suffrage movement.
Yeah, I can see how the one would follow from the other.
Yes.
But let's do a brief tarot reading on the future of MSG.
Sounds wonderful.
So the first card indicating the past that I've drawn is the Three of Wands.
Yeah, this card depicts a man with a red cloak strewn over his right shoulder. And he's standing amongst three straight branches, saplings perhaps. And he has his right hand clasped onto one of them, and he looks into the distance.
He leans slightly?
He leans very slightly against one of the saplings.
So the figure is calm, figure is stately.
Mm-hmm.
His back is turned to the viewer.
Yes.
And he looks from a cliff's edge at ships passing over the sea. He symbolizes strength, enterprise, effort, trade, commerce, discovery.
Right.
The ships perhaps belong to him.
The ships perhaps are exporting and importing monosodium glutamate.
It's certainly possible. So this is indicating that this fact, which is no surprise to any of us, that it is a great enterprise, and that there is a great deal of value in it.
Yes, he might be a monosodium glutamate magnate.
He certainly could be. I mean, he's stately, calm. These are both states that are achieved after consuming sufficient quantities of monosodium glutamate. Our operator is indicating that we have our second caller. Caller 2, you are on the air.
Hello?
Hello, caller.
Hello, how are you this evening?
Very, very well, thank you. Ahlan wa sahlan.
I just tuned in your program by accident. I had to sit on Lost and Found earlier today at 12 noon, and I just turned the radio on and found the gentleman who... searching for the mysterious clarinet music, could talk to the DJ who had the show that day. He wouldn't have a complete playlist of the repertoire for that Lost and Found show.
Yeah, we suggested that he contact the DJ, but unfortunately, he seemed to have some difficulty with it. But we suggested that he contact the program director and.
Okay, but the only one who would really know who played the song would be the DJ himself or herself.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have a question for you. You're doing tarot card readings now.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about my near future. Will it be a positive one or a negative one?
Well, we certainly would be happy to do that reading for you. If you could just imagine yourself cutting a deck of tarot cards... a dark peat color with blue checks with your less dominant hand.
Okay. I'm doing that.
And is there any particular event that you expect?
I don't know. It's a 50-50 chance, I think, in my future, whether it be positive or negative. It's to do with both mental and physical health.
Well, we're talking about short-term, medium-term, or long-term future, or eternal term?
Well, it's maybe all of them would be interesting to find out
draw
the progress
three cards.
Will be from today onward.
So the first card we draw will be for immediate short-term. And the card I've drawn is the Ten of Pentacles.
This card depicts perhaps a family scene under an arch in a building. An old man with several dogs at his feet, and a young, stately prince, perhaps, and a beautiful woman arm in arm in the background.
So the card is describing an entranceway to a house and domain. So this indicates gain and riches, family matters, the abode of a family. So does this have any meaning for you?
Somewhat. More though of the past than the future.
Well, it's interesting because traditionally we do three card reading: the past, present, and future. So I'm wondering if I'm channeling that usual approach.
Well, we also talked before about how the past can be an imprint for our future. So so caller, is there something about your past that you think might have bearing on the future?
Well, we're all products of our past, like you said, so I don't know. I'm sort of like what you said a few minutes ago about the leaving the past behind and going toward the future. I think you said something to that respect a few minutes ago before I called.
Right.
I think it's... part of leaving the past behind and going into staying in the present moment.
Was there anything in your life that you feel that you need to leave behind? Any memories that need to be purged?
Yes, you know, growing up, childhood. We all have our childhood experiences that form us as adults, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of living for today. I have difficulty like many people do, being here now is guru once described that as being. And who said that being here now? Was that Ram Dass?
I'm not familiar with the work of Ram Dass, but it's a very ancient sentiment that one should live for the moment. So the I went ahead and drew the second card, which should be for median future.
Okay.
Right, and this card appears to be the Page of Cups. It's interesting because it's actually a young man. It's a young man holding a goblet with a fish in the goblet, and they're looking face to face to one another. They seem to have an intimate relationship, the fish and the young page. And I guess the question is whether your medium-term future will be represented by the page or by the fish that's ensconced in the goblet.
So the divinatory meaning of this card is this fair young man, one impelled to render service, and one with whom you are connected, a studious youth, there's an indication of application, reflection, meditation, these things possibly directed to business.
Well, it's interesting to note that the fish is the Pisces. I am a Pisces.
So you may actually be represented by the fish who's holding the goblet, which contains you. I'm sorry, which is in the goblet, which is being held by the page.
So this, again, the page, we imagine will be a young man who is impelled to render some service for you.
Right, and interestingly, the fish, well, in the goblet is a form of bondage, prison, but it's not really a prison here because the page is moving the goblet to the fish's advantage. And I think this represents the fact that we're all in local prisons, basically. We're all in prisons of our own making within our daily life. But in the wider context, we have the freedom of our soul at all times.
Yeah, and the cup suit in general usually indicates family or feminine strength. So the page especially tends in this card seems very effeminate. So let's draw the final card for the distant future.
Okay.
And it is the Five of Wands.
Yeah, this is interesting. So it shows a group of men, five men in fact, who all are holding these sapling branches, these rods of wood, and they seem to be struggling with them somewhat. They're trying to either arrange them or perhaps joust with them. It's a little ambiguous.
Yeah, I always read this card as a sham fight, the mimic warfare. So the card indicates strenuous competition and struggle after riches and fortune. Often this is interpreted as meaning gold, gain, and opulence. So it seems like a positive future, but with some struggle.
A hint of struggle, of ambiguous.
That makes sense. Although I think the opulence is not material in my case. It's just more spiritual flourishing, enlightenment of the mind, and growing beyond beyond the bonds of the first card, you know.
Yeah, but I think it also indicates the need for pursuing this form of enlightenment and spiritual opulence in the context of a group of other people.
Well, I do that. I actually belong to several organizations that work for a betterment of humanity. You mentioned the second card with the fish in the cup, imprisoned by the cup, because Pisces, as I am, one of their characteristics is they're involved in their own self-undoing. So in other words, Pisces often are their own worst enemy.
Well, is that, have you experienced that in your own life?
Oh, yes, I have. I found that the prisons that I've made that have come upon me and other people I know who in my acquaintances in life, made most of the problems were made by themselves, either indirectly or directly, or unconsciously or consciously. But I think half the time, most of us are our own worst enemy.
Well, in this case, I think you're lucky to have the virtuous page, I think, to guide you within your prison.
Yeah, the page usually... So it's interesting that you are a Pisces. The Pisces and the Cups are both considered symbols of feminine strength. So maybe there is a strong source of female strength in your life or in your past.
Well, I have an equal number of women friends as men friends.
Or even within yourself, I find that often men have a lot more feminine strength than women do.
Or maybe a keenness or an acumen that is usually not seen. But the page indicates an idealism, which in this case is a positive thing.
Well, Pisces are idealistic. So the dreamer is ethereal minded sometimes.
So I hope that you have benefited and you know. From the reading, I hope that it's.
Yes, I just so if the three cards you pulled out of the deck, did in all total summed up, do you think the future, the present, and future will be positive, or progressive, or regressive?
It seems to me that there is progress, and that the real danger is that you that the struggle overtakes you.
Yes.
That last card is the real issue to me, which is that simply that in the future the struggle moves from mimic warfare to I mean there are really two sides to that, so you know take the struggle lightly.
So yes, there's a struggle, and I think every human mind is in a struggle between the darkness and the light, or good and evil, or good and bad, or virtue or sin, whatever terminology you want to use. Mm-hmm. So we're all in that. Each person's mind is a battleground of conflict between the higher self and the lower self, or whatever. And so that's pretty accurate. I've always found tarot card readings are very accurate. I've had some done in person years ago, and they're kind of eerily accurate sometimes.
Do you ever read for yourself?
No, I've tried to do online ones, like on the online horoscopes. They have tarot cards online, which just seem to be some interesting, surprisingly accurate too.
Yeah, I find somehow that it's strange because it's difficult to say that there's any formal way to understand this, but I find that I benefit by using the same set of cards repeatedly. The individual cards begin to carry some meaning for me.
You're saying for me there's a positive outlook, but we struggle first, then, right? Correct.
Right, and there will be struggle, but the struggle can also represent an ideal of harmony. Harmony among different people, and the question is whether you embrace the harmony for your own and others' enlightenment, or if it degenerates into spiritual warfare. So I think the choice will be yours.
That sounds pretty accurate, I guess. So I appreciate spending a few minutes to read my psyche for me. What's the name of your show? I didn't catch the beginning of it.
It's Music for Humans. We are usually on from 7 to 8, but this week Sferio will be on again next week, and so we are doing a special edition.
But you two are the regular hosts of the show?
Yeah, we have a group of hosts that cycle in.
Yeah, from 7 to 8 on Fridays.
It usually has a mystical nature to your show?
Yeah, we are New Age Talk Radio.
Okay, that's good. Oh, thank you for the... I won't keep you any longer. Maybe some of the callers want to contribute. So thank you for your time and your spiritual insight. I'll ponder that for a while.
Well, good luck with your struggle, caller.
Thank you.
Ma'a salama.
Bye.
We wish the caller the best of luck, but I certainly have hope in his that he will overcome the struggle.
Yeah, then we can get back in for...
Music for Humans will be back in a few minutes. We are going to take a short break. In the meantime, please enjoy the lovely music by Dean Evanson in the Ascension to Tibet album. Still Dr. Jalis Sakran.
And I remain Professor Levine.
Music for Human, for those who are just joining us, is New Age Talk Radio. We've been speaking for an hour on this extended edition mostly about spherical blob universe elements. And we've done tarot card readings for the past half hour on various things, MSG, one caller's future, and another caller's hope to find clarinet music that he heard earlier today.
Or perhaps in a dream.
Let's start things off with another caller. Caller 3, you are on the air.
Is this Dr. Jalis?
Yeah, ahlan wa sahlan.
Wabikum. Dr. Jalis, I could not get your program today on. Usually I get it on the computer and I couldn't, so I don't know what the subject of today, and for some reason it's not working online.
Yeah, unfortunately, the internet streaming is down today, so we are forced to return to the other two methods, that we traditionally use to broadcast music for human beings.
Uh-huh.
The first is using old analog radio technology. And the second is when there is a sufficient amount of psychic energy in the studio, we broadcast psychedelically.
Okay. How is Aurora around?
Aurora is running late, but we hope that she will join us for the remainder of the show.
Okay, too bad I can't listen to your show because I'm in right now in the Hijaz, in the old, far away.
Yeah, unfortunately, the range of our transmitter is very limited, but if you have had a sufficient quantity of magnesium in your diet, you may be able to meditate and contact us on some other channel.
Okay, so that means I cannot listen to your program today. Dr. Jalis, I wish you a good time, and I hope that you have a good program today, but I'll miss it.
Well, thank you very much, caller.
Salam.
Ma'a salama. It's always nice to get a caller from the old country. We are listening to the Dean Evanson's Ascension to Tibet album. It's very beautiful, very, very good music to meditate to, I found.
Indeed. Although there are no clarinets in this music.
Yeah, it's an unusual thing to hear clarinet music. Let's see. But a lot of other wind instruments.
Mm. Yes, it's very windy.
Very blowy. Dean Evanson writes, "Molecules sing and sway with a rhythm of a timeless journey that takes us to the stars and back, up through the thoughts of our everyday process, climbing beyond the random lessons of life to the top of our vantage."
I wonder if there truly is a top, though.
"The thing is alive, baby. There is no turning back now, and there never was. The reach beyond our personal selves to create a bridge of beauty, delivering the stars to our doorstep, the universe to our hearts, is the journey that goes between ourselves and the molecules we are made of.
Sometimes between our legs.
And the journey that requires nothing less than complete surrender to the inner self."
Or words to live by.
Or to read, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
It's somewhat odd to think that we might all be composed of many universes. This idea of a one-particle universe comes back to mind, that perhaps not only are we all composed of many universes, perhaps every particle that we are composed of is the entire universe. In some sort of strange topological construction.
A Klein bottle.
Except lots of them.
Right, and less drinkable.
Yes. Just many arrangements of the same universe again and again.
Yes, and this goes back to my question when you were reading the that beautiful text, the ancient text written by
the eminent and the ancient Dean Evanson.
Yes. The question is whether there truly is a top. Is there a top to our view vantage point? Or is there a never-ending cascade of visions and views? In other words,
will we ever reach a state of total enlightenment?
Right.
I found that at times I feel like I have reached total enlightenment for periods, and then the universe punishes me for my lack of humility.
Well, one view is that the stages of enlightenment are essentially circular and cyclical, and that when one reaches what one thinks is a true high, then the next highest stage is just the most possible deepest low.
Sort of ironic that we would loop back around in that way, but I could see that.
Right. And then on that view, when one reaches the stage of nirvana, the next stage would be to come back as the lowest possible life form.
The dung beetle, I believe, according to many, many philosophies.
Yes. Although some skeptics view the mouse as lower than the dung beetle.
Because although dung beetles live on and make houses from excrement.
Well, the dung beetles were actually worshipped by the ancient Egyptians, who many believe reached the highest level of human enlightenment in our history.
The scarab?
Scarab, indeed.
Whereas the mouse has been worshipped by no one.
Yeah, the mouse is usually viewed as a form of amusement, like in Tom and Jerry.
Mice don't think.
That's right, they just act without thinking. Impulsively.
In fact, there are many bad things that one could say about mice. Consider, for example, that mice can't speak English, and therefore cannot speak the truth.
All right, and I've always been a strong proponent of making English the official language of mice in the United States.
Well, you know, I don't want to promote, you know, English speech necessarily. Not that I want to diminish English speech.
No, but don't you think that mice, when they come to our country, should learn our language?
Well, I would hesitate to to encourage any sort of mice speciesophobia. I think it's unlikely that mice will threaten the ways of life of any other Americans.
Yeah, but perhaps our spiritual serenity and security.
And mice have no friends. I have in the past, in my meditation, entered the mind of a mouse, and I found my goal at the time was only to explore the creature.
Yeah, but I guess it was a very lonely place to be.
It was extremely lonely. Let me tell you briefly of the experience. It is bizarre and disturbing. I found myself immediately ensconced in this tight container, and it was very closed and dark but warm, and on four sides it was closed completely, but it's sort of like in a hollow tube made of metal with a metal base, and on the other side was some sort of fleshy barrier. And it was very warm. The fleshy barrier was emitting quite a lot of heat, but it was dark, totally dark. And gradually my mouse eyes began to perceive that there was heat coming from the base of the cup, and I was confused spiritually in this state, and I gradually began to perceive that the base was growing warmer than the flesh barrier, and it was growing uncomfortably warm. And then it grew so warm that I began to panic and burrow into the flesh, and I heard the most unusual sounds, which now I recognize to be screams, but at the time I did not have the perception. And in my confusion and my despair, I withdrew my spirit and found myself in the spirit of the possessor of the flesh barrier, which of course was a person who was being tortured in some Greek method.
Sounds truly frightening.
And I think, you know, it took me a long time before I would even try to meditate again. But I think the problem was that I possessed a mouse, and I really blame the entire experience on the mice.
It's interesting, though, that you talked a little about the loneliness of the experience. And I would think that a more lonely experience would be not being enclosed, but rather in an open field of total darkness with nothing on either side. I think this is true loneliness when there's nothing around us. And there's just black emptiness in all directions. And when I've actually meditated upon the essence of loneliness, this is often what I've experienced, this never-ending void in all directions.
Being on the peak of some valley and seeing no one nearby. I think that even more lonely is seeing companionship distantly.
I wonder if this is actually the experience of the universe as a whole, and I've tried sometimes in my meditation practice to inhabit the entire universe, to embody it, but I've never quite been able to succeed in this endeavor. And I wonder if the experience of the universe is a lonely experience because there's nothing else. Or if perhaps it's a feeling of unity with everything that exists and of warmth. I think this is one of the deep questions of mankind.
This question about the possibility of possessing the entire universe simultaneously?
Well, this question of whether the true nature of the universe, the experience of the entire universe, is one of deep loneliness and sorrow, or whether it's one of warmth and unity. And I think the ultimate quest of any meditation practice could be to answer this question.
I have found that whenever I reach a stumbling block of this type, it tends to indicate that I am pursuing the wrong direction. So instead of perhaps trying to possess the entire universe, you may try to possess nothing, or only a single particle.
Which, as we said,
may in fact be the entire universe.
The grain of sand, or perhaps a shard of glass.
Or discarded...
Kleenex.
Perhaps. I mean, I think it may sound strange to listeners, but really there is no reason that we should be so proud as to be in any existence more noble than a discarded Kleenex. Maybe that's why it is human nature to look in a Kleenex before discarding it. Maybe we expect to find ourselves there.
Right. Or the entire universe.
Well, I think this is as good a time as any to throw out our call-in number. The number is 617-253-8810. And our operator would be pleased to patch you in, and perhaps you could give us advice on how to possess all or none of the universe. And in the moment we have now, I would like to share with the listenership our weather forecast for the coming few days. Our New Age meteorology machine indicates that that on Monday the temperature will reach a peak of 45 degrees. That's 25 degrees for our older listeners.
Is that in Kelvin?
I don't know. It must be Kelvin. It's very cold. And the other days are colder.
Not much else to say but that.
So I think that if you intend to inhale nitrogen, Monday would be the day. Could it really be in Kelvin? I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, I believe that.
I know it feels cold.
Blood freezes at 150 Kelvin, I believe.
Yeah, 150 Kelvin.
So that's the blood freezing point.
So if we are mistaken, then you're fine. But otherwise, keep your heater on and try to keep your blood from freezing.
And perhaps try to flee to a warmer planet.
I hear the sun is somewhat warm.
Yeah, the sun...
Well, there is such a thing as being too warm.
Right. But I mean, still might be a good winter getaway.
It's funny, but like walking around, I have wished that I was in the center of the sun. And just to get away from the oppressive cold. And I think it's unlikely that, you know, I mean, certainly I would instantly be burned to a gaseous carbon mixture, but
is it really hotter than Cairo?
I mean, I've been to Cairo.
Right, but that's when you have a eastern disposition in your temperature sensing.
So maybe I'm somehow in tune with Cairo.
In tune with Cairo, and I wonder if that's, well, the ancient Egyptians also worshipped the sun.
And the scarab.
And the scarab, the dung beetle. And I wonder if your thirst for the sun comes from an ancient past life in Egypt. Perhaps a sun worshipper. Or a sun king.
What do sun worshippers do at night?
They sleep.
But what if they have a problem? I mean, you know, people here, like, I like to meditate when I have difficulties in the evening.
Mm.
But I think that would be problematic for me.
But I think we all need a time when we can really suffer. Suffering without meditation, just experiencing the sorrow of deep human pain. It's important. And I think sun worshippers in after sunset and before sunrise have an opportunity to experience deep human pain.
It's just difficult for me to imagine being able to identify with the sun.
Well, do you think moon worshippers are in a better position?
Not necessarily. Only that, I would imagine that the sun would have to have an agent on Earth
to carry out its plans.
Well, I mean, only for us to, you know, to pass on the message.
Message of the sun. I've wondered, in the sun religion, what is the highest ideal for humanity? What is the place of humanity?
Yeah, why did the sun put us here?
And why does it continue to nourish us with its rays of warmth and life? Do we really deserve the sun's warmth and life nourishment?
I know some people that are really deserving of a lot more nourishment than others.
I wonder, for those living in the winter scene of Cambridge, whether perhaps we live here because we deserve it. Perhaps our life has placed us in the brutal cold of Cambridge because of maybe our past sins. Past
in previous lives.
Yes, previous lives, our failure perhaps to appreciate the benevolence and beneficence and munificence of the sun.
In previous lives, when someone comes back and remembers that they were in a previous life, they always tell us to relax. I mean, I know that's not the message that they pass on directly. Often, sooner or later, it becomes a message about deities and about rituals and animal sacrifices and
human sacrifices.
Or other animals.
Virgin sacrifices.
Pubic hair braiding rituals and
piercings and of the flesh,
hole punching of large documents and book reports, and it's overall. I mean, there is a ritual ritualistic aspect, but it's overall a negative message, I think. It says, you know, here is a being who
needs to be chained.
And, you know, it is chained. We are chained by forces that we cannot resist. And I wonder how such a wonderful message that the world is not the end of existence, that what we do here only matters in that our attitude is important, became a message of ritualistic harm, of oppression on others, on xenophobia.
Well, I believe that at the dawn of creation, a terrible misfortune occurred, and the forces of disorganization came into being in their own sphere. And each time we come into life anew, we're reincarnated, the forces of disorganization plant some seed in us. So all of us have some seed of disorganization, as well as the power of light. And these are struggling forces within us. And so even when we come from a past life, sometimes we encourage these forces of disorganization over the powers of light.
As our earlier caller mentioned, you are speaking about a sort of dual existence.
Mm-hmm.
The concept that there may be a force of light and a force of darkness. And yet, if there really were such a symmetry in existence, which I wouldn't deny, it would only be that one cannot say that the force of light was good and the force of darkness was evil. They are only different views.
Well, in fact, according to the ancient traditions of Jewish mysticism, there is only one substance, and this substance itself is neither good nor evil. All the goodness and the evilness in the world comes from the organization of this primordial substance. It can be ordered into structure, which is good, or it can be disorganized, like the prion in the brain, which causes mad cow disease. It's essentially a form of disorganization, which then causes further disorganization in the brain until the brain becomes a muddled porridge.
Resulting, so you are saying again, it's disordered, that is the force of darkness.
Right, a disorder which causes other disorder.
Let's take a caller. Caller 4, you are on the air.
I take it you guys haven't accepted the light of Jesus into your lives.
The light of, well, perhaps you'd care to elaborate?
Well, I hear you guys talking about the force of light and darkness, and to me that means Jesus and the powers of, you know, the Romans being in the darkness and Satan, etc. And I noticed that you guys hadn't mentioned the name Jesus, and I wanted to say that the two of them are one and the same, and I don't know exactly what you mean by lightness, but to me that means Jesus. So, I mean, you can't go around, you know, walking around the whole issue as if Jesus don't exist.
Well, caller, I hesitate to put labels such as good and evil on. As I was saying,
Jesus is a good man. It says so in the Bible. You can't shake my opinion to that.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to impugn your deity, but only to say that life as it is now could not exist without disorder. So if our interpretation of the force of...
Well, that's why all the suffering's going on, and then Jesus came to order our lives, isn't that right?
But life existed before Jesus.
Yeah, and they were all heathens. They were worshiping the Roman emperors and, no indoor plumbing.
Indoor plumbing, I believe, is a great advance of the forces of order over disorder.
Exactly.
Yeah, before indoor plumbing existed,
and homosexuals and
the most advanced form of a sewage would be to build little canals outside along the roads, and you'd have streams of raw sewage flowing on either side of the road. I believe on the right side, I believe it was also on the right side would go, yeah.
That's just disgusting.
Well, I'm going to do a tarot card reading on Jesus.
I don't think he'd approve of that. I mean, I don't know much about the tarot, but I don't know. I don't think Harry Potter's the devil, but I don't engage in reading it either.
Well,
it's borderline to me. I'd rather not be a part of this. Well, maybe this once.
What about the Harry Potter movies? Would you watch those?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I don't watch anything with special effects. I don't believe in it.
Was this even before the advent of computer-generated special effects?
I don't use computers. I don't really understand the question.
I mean, you mentioned that you object to special effects, but even
I don't think we should be portraying anything that we can't really do. I think that's misrepresentation.
So, if the caller and Professor Levine could imagine Jesus cutting the tarot card deck with his left...
Now, wait a minute. I think that's blasphemy. You can't imagine idols or statuettes of your own personal god. I think we should let the Holy Spirit do the cutting and leave our imagination to imagine about other things.
Okay, yeah. So, it's just conventional that one uses the querent, so to speak, to be involved somehow, and we are asking about Jesus.
But
Jesus do it himself?
I believe Jesus was a man, and thus he had hands. And I don't think it's idolatry, then, to imagine those hands.
Well, let Jesus imagine it for himself, you know? I mean, he's right there. Might as well just ask him.
Okay, let's ask Jesus to imagine that his dominant hand is cutting the deck of tarot cards.
And
that's something I've always wondered. I think Jesus was left-handed. I think I heard that somewhere.
Southpaw?
Yeah.
So, we will draw three cards representing past, present, and future. So the first card is the inverted lover's card. So this is the lover's card, but reversed. So that means the interpretation will be backwards.
Yeah, I believe that...
But Jesus never took a woman into his heart.
I believe this is a reference to Adam and Eve, actually. And the spirit was the spirit of Jesus within the heart of Adam and Eve.
So the card really is a card of married life. Father and mother, the child placed above them. This indicates that these also signify truth, honor, and love. But this may be the gloss of a commentator.
Hello?
Yes, caller.
Hello?
So the conclusion, of course, is that Jesus took no lovers.
I love Jesus.
Well, caller, the present card is the Three of Swords.
Yeah, he said, I'm not going to bring... love, I'm going to bring the sword. I've come to bring the sword.
And this is actually a heart being pierced by three swords.
Right. So him and Peter and the Virgin Mary piercing the heart with their swords of the house of Jesus.
The heart of humanity, perhaps?
The heart of Romans and Jews.
The Three of Swords generally means removal, absence, or delay. So... This, of course, means that Jesus is gone, that his return is delayed, there is division, dispersion. So we will draw the final card. It is the Eight of Pentacles. This card will indicate the future.
Well, this is very interesting. It shows a youthful man... working with a hammer and chisel on a bench. And he's actually working on a sphere with a pentagram carved into the sphere.
They're pentacles, discs.
Yeah, with a pentagram etched into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like Jesus building the church.
So the divinatory meaning is the future work or commission. And very interesting.
Maybe that means Jesus is back on earth. I don't know how this stuff works.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is also that the pentagram is often a symbol for the devil.
Well, it's an ancient symbol of Venus and the path it reaves across the sky. I mean, everyone knows. I mean, I read the Da Vinci Code.
Well, in any case, usually in tarot, the pentagram simply indicates science, knowledge, learning, commerce...
Fertility.
And order in general. Well, usually cups would indicate fertility.
Okay, I've never even heard of tarot, so I'll take your word for it.
And so, caller, bringing this back to our discussion on the forces of darkness, it would seem to me that, well, yes, you keep saying Satan, but Satan, I understand, is a great mischievous deity in your faith.
Well, he burns all the homosexuals and queers together in a big pot in hell.
So he's an anti-homosexual deity
who cooks a lot.
He cooks the sinners in hell.
So
he's a cook, all right.
Other sins are permissible, or I'm not clear.
Well, you know, if you don't accept Jesus into your heart, and this goes directly to you, I don't know what your religion is, but this is what happens to sinners, is they get sent down to hell when they die, and they're subject to the fire and sulfurous burning of the fires and pits of hell.
Caller, let's bring yet another voice in on this. Caller 5, you are on the air.
Ah, my Fama, Arthur here.
Ah, welcome, Arthur.
Welcome. Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
Well, it's certainly good to have you.
Are you a Christian, Arthur?
Sorry?
Are you a Christian, Arthur?
No, sir.
Okay. What do you believe in?
That's just really interesting, though, talking about religion, and because I think New Age in a really important
Jewish?
Way... No, sir. It's just in a really important way kind of inverted from the New Age movement. You know, I'm not saying good, bad, upside, downside, anything like that. They're just kind of mirror views of each other, because with organized religion, a lot of times what it's projected, what it's about, is taking your life and adapting it to a set of norms or a set of beliefs, you know, the canon, whatever's in the books, whether that's one book, the Bible, or a whole series. But what ends up happening in practice is the opposite. What it really is you taking your views and adapting them, making them fit to the book. So you have, you know, you have Republican congressmen going crazy about gay rights and just constructing whatever they want out of scripture. But, you know,
and
what
some
about
of them are gay themselves.
But what about shellfish?
Hypocrites,
you know,
are going to be the first to burn.
Yeah, but, you know, but they're eating shellfish right and left. What about that? You know, that's an abomination. And, yeah, because Deuteronomy, whatever.
And they, I think...
They're buying slaves. The Bible says you can't have slaves.
But with New Age, you got just the opposite, right? It's New Age, really, at its core, it's about take inspiration over the world, you know, holy books from all over, and just cherry-picking whatever you want and manipulating them, not manipulating them, but making them work within your viewpoint. Right. It's very open to interpretation. That's what it's all about.
Do you say new age? Do you mean the new millennium?
No, I mean the new age movement. But what ends up happening, you know, that's core. But what ends up happening, again, is the opposite. It's you know, sound resounds. It's good vibrations, constructive interference that can be heard around the world. You know, so just as organized religions, they try to be about adapting your life to a standard that's kind of the opposite of what New Age projects, and yet that's exactly what happens. It ends up working out that way. It ends up, you know, you get harmonies, you get natural patterns among all these different groups, this heterogeneous movement. You get all these people on the same wavelength.
I don't understand exactly what
you mean, but I think, you know, you might benefit from a good reading of the Bible. Have you ever read the Bible the whole way through?
Yes, sir.
Well, maybe you should read it again, because I didn't see anything about vibrations or harmonic equilibrium.
No, I'm not talking about the Bible. I'm talking about New Age.
About the Bible. I didn't see anything about the New Age in the Bible except the apocalypse, and I don't think that's what you're talking about.
Well, let's.
No. I'm talking about Santa Cruz and New Delhi and you know, Burlington, Vermont, and you know, just wherever those New Agers are. Talking about yoga and rain precipitation healing and homeopathic medicine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that. I just read the Bible and I keep to myself.
Cross-cultural shamanism, all these things, all these different movements, you know, very loosely coupled, and yet again, sounds, vibrations.
Yeah, I believe that an important aspect is also finding commonalities in all these traditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I think the point about finding difference is also very powerful, that when we find harmonic difference, then we can vibrate to a new level of vibration that we haven't experienced before.
Yeah.
We can vibrate at a higher frequency.
Yeah, difference isn't discord, you know? It doesn't have to be discord. It can be, it's what makes the world what it is.
Well, even discordant chords are sometimes a very powerful element of beautiful music.
I mean, even just the world itself, the whole universe, from a chaos theory point of view, is right on the threshold between chaos and uniform, orderly nature. You know, it's kind of riding that saddle between the two. It's kind of on the broken glass crack between the two sides.
The entropy balance.
Yeah.
That's why a show like Music for Human Beings is a call-in show.
I don't know what
to
talk about.
No, absolutely.
I just try to believe in Jesus. I mean, do what's right, you know? I don't know about music.
Well,
maybe that's what
Jesus is great. Jesus, it's just very inspirational. I mean, you know, I'm not so into the Old Testament myself, but the New Testament has a lot of great messages.
I have a pendant of Jesus around my neck right now, and I'll tell you, this has gotten through much more in life and in marriage than any music could do.
Caller 4, may I ask you a question?
Is that me?
Yes.
Well, go ahead.
Well, caller 4, I always thought it was strange that... So, I come from a Muslim culture, and I always thought it was odd that Christians wore crosses around their necks despite expecting Jesus to return. Would that not be Jesus returns and he wants to see crosses everywhere?
Well, it was a great thing he did. I'm sure he's pretty proud of the thing that he did. He knew what was coming.
And if it was a new millennium, you know, now it would be an electric chair everyone wore around their neck.
Yeah, well,
or, you know,
luckily
a gas chamber.
We got a better symbol than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the new Jesus is going to be too happy when he comes around, but I don't think the fact that people who love him are wearing crosses is going to be the most thing he's concerned about. He's going to be upset about computers. And you know,
it's going to be nuclear weapons, Russian communism.
Yes, yes.
Why?
What computers?
He didn't use them, no. No.
Jesus built with his own two hands.
Okay.
But I believe
he had a direct relationship with his tools. He didn't let anything...
Computers
you know?
Are built with robot hands.
What?
Computers are built with robot hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I think we should have a direct relationship with the things that we use to book us... in airplanes.
There is a movement.
What about hospitals?
Build your own computer movement.
I think if so many people didn't have AIDS because they were using computers, we wouldn't need the computers to run the hospitals. That's what I think.
What about antibiotics?
What about what?
Antibiotics. I mean, you know, you need antibiotics. You don't make them with your own two hands.
I don't know what that is. I don't want to know.
So caller number four, how long did it take you to construct the cross that you wear around your neck? I assume you built it with your hands, right?
Well, I bought it in a shop.
A Walmart?
No, I did not. I bought it at a roadside stand.
Okay. It was probably made in Saipan. It's probably made in Saipan in a sweatshop.
In Bhutan?
Saipan.
I don't know what that is. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good not to worry about things sometimes. You have to...
I think that's something Jesus would be really unhappy about.
Well, I think that's, you know, Jesus died for our sins, and we can let him worry about some of those things. And when he comes back, which he probably was born very recently again, when he comes back, when he's about 30 years old, he'll take care of all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great teachings, you know, in the good book. Although, just the idea of original sin is just always, it's just such a bummer, you know?
Well, I don't believe in beating my wife, and that's something I stick to. I've never beat my wife for years of marriage.
I don't believe in you beating your wife either, yeah, totally.
I'm coming close. Jesus knows I've come close, but I haven't actually lifted the hand.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Lord knows. Well, I don't know. This is just kind of silly. I just, you know, I don't really like using telephones. But you need to use them. I just think computers are used for you know, you don't really need them. Communication is essential with the telephone. You need to call up people, you know.
Well, it's interesting. When the telephone was first invented, many Victorians were concerned that it would lead to degeneration and immorality because the young women of the house would be able to contact men on the outside.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Jesus wants us to be Amish. What do you think? I think Jesus wants us to go out and live our lives as long as they're on computers.
What about television? I mean, would Jesus be happy about Telemundo?
I love television.
What about,
I watch it every day.
Okay. I mean, what's the difference? It's like a small box with electronics inside. Why would he hate computers?
Mine's not small at all. Mine's 6'3" inches.
So Jesus would be down with that. He could resonate with that.
I think Jesus would probably appreciate certain shows. Maybe not all the sitcoms that I watch.
You know, what about like the E Channel?
The what?
The E Channel.
All I watch is Jerry Springer.
No, I don't think he'd harmonize with that, no.
People working through their problems, people helping people. I think that's what Jesus came here for.
Uh-huh.
People helping people. I turn it off whenever they start talking about electronics, though.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you, the best thing you can do is make something with your hands, and that's what I do all day.
Uh-huh.
Well, callers, unfortunately, we are...
I work at an automobile factory, and I just put on the, you know, I remove those robotic arms with my own two hands.
Yeah.
Put the cars together.
Well,
we give them to good, healthy Americans.
Callers, unfortunately, we are reaching the end of the program.
Ah, believe me.
Thank you so much for...
1-800-JESUS-LOVES-YOU helped me out a lot. I just want to put that out there.
Thank you, callers. And thank you for calling in this evening. Thank you to all our callers and to Professor Levine for joining me this evening.
Thank you for having me.
I am Editor Jalis Sakran. You are listening to The End of Music for Human Beings. We are New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you here on WMBR 88.1 FM, Fridays at 7 p.m. Ma'a salama. Stay tuned for Night Owl.